10 million years. I have known and loved you for years, for centuries, for millennia. I have known and loved you since before knowledge and love, since before sight, before sound, before touch, before memory. I have known and loved you with every cell that has ever birthed and died in my body. I have known and loved you since you were me and we were one. I first remember you as one among many who lazed in the shade of 1,000 broad leaves, or scampered from tree to tree in search of food, shelter, or amusement. You were on the periphery of my vision, as I must have been at the edge of yours, no more than another broad-shouldered young male, posturing aggression, or lazing in the sun, slowly and carefully picking nits from his own or another's hair. To you I was the same, identifiable only through one unwitting habit or another, scratching a buttock when bored, yelping when a young child tried to steal my food. Unmated, we hovered around the pack, wary of our peers and afraid of our elders. Day after day, year after year, eating and drinking, excreting, copulating, and waiting for a future that none of us could conceive. At times we found ourselves confronting each other, in anger or in play, and when we did so, there would be the briefest of moments in which our eyes met, and some incomprehensible message flashed between us, a message bearing promise of ineffable knowledge and pleasure. But the message so weak that it died at birth, suffocated by the overwhelming urge to prove ourselves, to strike, and to dominate. At other times, in rare moments of silence and tranquility, we were haunted by desires we could not identify, unrecognizable shadows in a fog of ignorance and inexperience. I would find myself watching you, your shoulders hunched, your eyes darting hither and thither, your hands worrying the thick peel of some fruit. And I would wonder who you were, why I was staring at you, and what I wanted from you. And in the eye blink it took me to leap up and scurry towards you, these thoughts, so vague as they were disturbing, would be swept aside by greed for the food you held and apprehension of the hostility with which you rose to confront me. Generations lived and died. Bodies lengthened and thickened, hair thinned, jaws receded and faces expressed deepening knowledge and emotions. Driven by curiosity, we left the safety and comfort of the known for a world whose brightness both invited and terrified. Infants clinging to mothers, youngsters playing nervously, adults emboldened by each other's cries, we stepped out into the vast emptiness of the plains. There, pain and fear multiplied in the terrors that lurked around us, below the horizon, behind the hillock, beneath the water. Many died from the violence of teeth and claws, or the surprise of floods and rockfalls. Others faltered and fell from no cause that we could discern. Then we would stop and stare, uncomprehending at their bodies lying still, would wail at their silent blank faces, cradle them in our arms in the futile hope that our warmth would keep them safe and comfortable until life returned. In the forest, we had not needed to speak beyond the few cries that identified food and water, safety and danger. It was on the plains that words emerged, sounds that enabled us to identify and pursue our game and to enact the chase for our women and children. With each generation, new sounds were born, for ourselves and for the animals which fed us, for the trees and caves that offered shelter, for the elements that protected and persecuted us, for feet pounding across the ground, for sharp stone cutting into gut, for the bloody infant emerging and the last breath sighing. And with each new sound that mirrored the world we could see and hear and touch, light was thrown upon other worlds, the worlds that lay deep in our sleep and far behind our closed eyes. Seasons rushed by, bearing heat and cold, rain and drought, wind and calm. We hunted, moved, and hunted again. We stumbled and sped across rocks, grass, sand, mud, and marsh. We ripped sinew and bone from steaming carcasses and gnawed at dried or rotting meat. We returned to our families in haste and at leisure, starving and satisfied, bearing food and sometimes our dead. I learnt to wait and watch for you, to seek out the angle and swiftness of your arm, the tension in your haunch, the light in your eyes. I began to welcome your sharp, strong smell and your deep, rough voice. And at night, as the moon watched and the sky sparkled, I greeted the roughness of your skin and the mat of your hair as together we lay, shivering under thin and sparse hides. On those cold nights, far from our women and children, exhausted, sometimes hungry, sometimes sated, our bodies shifted again and again to ease the stiffness, pain that seeped into our bones from the hard, uneven soil, the rhythm of our hips and the urge to piss out our seed as thoughtlessly as we pissed out our water gave way to slower, gentler motion. We became aware of pleasure and of a desire to offer pleasure to each other. We heard the echo of emotions we could neither identify nor comprehend. Tentatively, our hands reached out, uncertain whether to strike, pinion and control, or to hold, welcome and embrace. Sometimes the action of the one raised the wrath of the other, and sometimes indifference led to anger. But in those moments in which our bodies rocked in harmony, our mouths trembled and our eyes questioned, we were held by a force as powerful and uncontrollable as the driving rain or burning sun. Years passed. We changed and were no different. We knew each other and were strangers. At times, grey streaked your hair and beard, and the pelt round your waist hung tattered and stiff. At times, you were a naked youth on his first kill, bolder and more vulnerable than his brothers and cousins. At times you loped ahead with a man's pride and grace, trophies dangling from your waist or the image tattooed to your face and breast. I saw you left behind with the women, maimed or misshapen, unable to hunt. I watched you run away from my agony and wounds. I saw your body abandoned in the dust. Your thin body leapt at me, one of 20 or 100 desperate for food. You stood uncertain amongst the bloated forms of those from whom we stole. Each blow that I struck at such moments of enmity, each wound that severed muscle and spurted blood, was driven by a hatred and anger that only now do I recognize was directed at myself, with the same pain and incomprehension that you, time and again, must have slashed, battered, and destroyed my tired, aching body. We moved north to the land of cold, where our words hung white in the air before us. We wore thick hides that stank of the beasts we had killed, and through the deep snow chased the lumbering mammoths, great beasts with sad eyes that kept us alive. We now talked of the pleasure of speech itself, to relive the hunt, to praise or blame our companions, to describe wounds we had received or escaped, to pray to the gods, seen and unseen, whom we had begun to worship. We still had no words for our longing, few concepts beyond dissatisfaction in our existence and rare contentment in each other's presence. But in our silences, we offered each other peace. And even without words, I knew that, no matter how similar the action, if my sex hardened and my seed pumped into your belly or between your legs, if your warmth spilled into my hand or into my bowels, the body I held was yours and not my mate's, and my desire for you was deeper and more powerful than I had ever known for any woman. Fire, clothing, and permanent shelter allowed us to settle. In some places we did. In others we continued to hunt and wander. Women watched the seasons and the soil, saw seeds springing into shoots, learned to plant and to hoard. With these skills, estrangement deepened as the balance between the sexes, between feeder and fed, protector and protected, tipped askew. Resentment and anger grew, and more frequently the strength that we used against our prey and our enemies turned against our women, against each other. Still, you and I lived apart, our daily lives dominated by the communities in which we lived, by the unforgiving web of deference and loyalties each of us owed and were owed. As infants, we clung to our mothers. As children, we feared our fathers. As young men, we were rivals for the mate who would keep our fire, bear our children, and grow our crops. As adults, even as we enjoyed a few years of strength and laughter before accident, war, or invisible disease struck us down, we were preoccupied with our women and children, with the hunger that was seldom more than a day away, with enemies both real and imagined. Sometimes we found each other, in that year when, too old for our mothers and too young for our fathers, we were free to go where we wished and play as we willed. Then we might become aware of each other's presence, and find ourselves in rare privacy, hesitating to express frightening new emotions in words, gestures, or caress. All too often we were swept apart by the demands of adulthood. Yet, as there had been on the plains, there were times when we could hunt and walk together, eat and sleep side by side, share the warmth of our bodies and the heat of our desire. Then, years later, alone in age, I might huddle hunchbacked under a blanket of leather or wool, and as I stared into the fire or the shadows of trees on a moonless night, remember an hour, a night, a day spent in your company, a day that I held as dear as a lifetime with the mother of my children, and with children who ignored me as I ignored my father before him. Once, perhaps, in 100 years, we might have time with each other. If our wives had died, if no other women needed husbands, and if our children had returned to the kinship of their mothers' families. Forced by custom to maintain households empty of other bodies, other voices and smells, we lived solitary lives, pitied by our tribe, rejected if we had not proved our worth in battle, the hunt or wisdom. But it was in those dying years, with no more to distract us than the source of our next meal, that you and I had the freedom to spend time with each other, to search for pleasures that our minds, if not our bodies, could share. Those were golden years indeed, when stiff bones rested against old trees and quiet voices shared memories and dreams. Even more rarely, as young men, the urge to be together would be so strong that we refused to take wives, insisting instead to live together and share each night a bed. Some tribes expelled us, forcing us into the wilderness and a daily struggle for life. Others accepted us, grudgingly or in wonder, the objects of suspicion and ridicule, or of respect and goodwill. But whatever our fate, I accepted it if I shared it with you, for then as now, in ways that I have never understood, your presence was all that I needed to dull every pain of the body and mind. Tens, hundreds, thousands of years passed, Our communities spread across the globe in search of food, warmth, and distance from our enemies. Civilizations grew and shriveled. Arts flourished and died. Beliefs multiplied. We danced on warm sandy shores, carved homes out of rock, tempted mammal and fish from the waters of icy oceans. Our features changed, but whether your eyes were narrow or your lips full and your skin dark, whether your eyes faded to blue and your hair to yellow, whether you were short and plump or tall and skeletal, you never failed to attract me, the hardness in my groin ever seeking the hardness in yours, as magnets seek the pole. Yet as much as I desired your body, it was always more that I needed. I would be drawn by the valour that had killed a lion and cowed a village, moved by the laughter you gave your children, swayed by the wisdom that ruled a village or a kingdom. With knowledge came wealth, and with wealth came leisure for the few, and poverty and despair for the many. Sometimes we shared riches, sometimes we shared destitution, and sometimes destitution and riches formed a bridge across which one stretched a hand to the other. We were more adept now at recognizing our attraction for each other, at recognizing that we were not alone, yet still we were far from always admitting our longing. Sometimes the men amongst whom we lived and the gods whom we honoured and feared forbade us from being together. At other times our desire might be acknowledged and celebrated by others as well as ourselves. Thus, as a boy, I was wooed by you. As soldiers, we fought together. As priests, we worshipped together. Over the years, legends grew up about us. A kernel of truth became a tree of fiction. The emperor with the cut sleeve, the homely philosopher and his handsome pupil, and again the warrior who died with his companion, or who sought to bring his companion back from the dead. Yet even when our affection was commended, we were seldom admired as lovers seeking equals. We were accepted only if our need for each other was sanctioned by pedagogy, religion, or war. I might teach you to be a man. You might instruct me as a warrior. One or other would don sacred robes and tread the awesome path of the gods. But if we were both of a similar background and age and wished no more than to lead quiet lives together alongside our neighbours, we were seldom accepted. For hundreds of generations, the emotions that could be flaunted if one was 14 and the other 3 times his age had to be hidden if we were both in our 20s or 30s. Strange, is it not, that within little more than a lifetime the opposite has become true? For these reasons and others, for each time that we found each other, many more times we failed. We did not recognize the one we sought, or did not even know that we searched. Our desire would be stunted, stillborn, no more than the joyless friction of 2 strangers in a deserted field or the banter of hothouse intellects. Our deepest needs denied, we might explode into violence to leave a stranger raped, a wife beaten, a slave killed. In youth and middle age, we revelled in others' weakness, and in old age, loss and impotence made us bitter and reviled. Afraid of each other and ourselves, I would abuse you, or fall victim to your abuse, as we became in turn servants overworked and underpaid, children seduced into incomprehension and fear, adults betrayed by blackmail and exposure. Often your body was no more than one among hundreds. Prizes I awarded myself for a contest I misunderstood. At times it offered not the challenge and reward of an equal, but nothing more than the misplaced security of unfulfilled childhood or the animal warmth we found beneath the stars millennia ago. And through it all, we lived in a world of wives and children, of neighbours and friends, wars and peace, politics and commerce. At times I resented, bullied, and killed the women who shared my life. But there have also been times when I have recognized the love, and it has been love, that most recent and complex of emotions, that women have borne me, and I have loved them in return. For if truth is told, it does not matter who we love if they love us with the same intensity. I have loved my children too, if not each and at every moment. Sometimes it seemed they were no more than pets or farm animals running about my feet, more expensive and less rewarding than a hunting dog or well-fed swine, but at other times their laughter and affection and vulnerability has knocked me from my height to their feet and drawn tears of joy and sorrow from my eyes. But these emotions are fleeting in comparison to the love between us that has survived across generations, across countless lives, survived even when we did not know we loved. I have loved you without ever speaking to you, without you ever knowing of my existence. I have loved you as a cousin, as a teacher or a pupil, a minion or a rich man, a captive or a king. I have loved you as a stranger, as a familiar, as an enemy, a friend. I have loved your smile and laughter, your sorrow and pain, your dedication and insouciance. I have loved you because you were who you were, because you could do nothing ever but awaken love in me. And that love remains. As my eyes grow dim and my hearing fades, your presence becomes stronger, so that the hand that grasps me or caresses my brow, your whisper in my ear, the faint smell of your sweat, your lips holding mine, all tell me what I have always known, always believed, and always want to hear, that you love me, that you always have and always will love me. In each death we are reborn. I see you everywhere, as you see me, in a myriad of lives, and ages, and communities. In some cities we flirt on the streets, open businesses, and elect politicians. Effortless days flowing into effortless nights where we gather in bars and restaurants and private homes and celebrate our peace and our wealth and our love. But these opportunities are still rare. In many towns we can only meet in nighttime parks, dark alleys and stinking urinals. Our hands grasping, our bodies straining towards each other through thick leather jackets or thin cotton robes, our goal no more than an orifice to enter, an itch to satisfy, an orgasm to expend. And often, whether we live in our richest or our poorest lands, even that brief human contact is but a dream that comes to us in the night, and from which we waken angry, unhappy, or afraid. I do not know what the future brings. I only know that it will be many more generations before we earn the respect of all the communities in which we live, the respect which will allow us to love each other openly, permanently, and unconditionally. But in my heart, I fear that moment will never come. It is not that we have enemies, although many still hurt us as we sometimes hurt ourselves, but that we are all, every man, woman, and child on this planet, destroying our home as quickly and as eagerly as we once created it. As we do so, we leave to those who follow a world as hostile as the one that you and I faced 10 million years ago. But if that happens, if the forests die, if cities explode, seas overflow, and only 1,000 of us survive, I will not be afraid, because I know that you and I will still be here. And in that dim, uncertain future, as now, as always in our past, wherever I am, if I am with you, I am happy. And if I am alone, I search for you across a crowded or deserted world, and hope and pray that you see me.
That was 10 Million Years by Martin Foreman, read by Jamie Richard Stewart.
Arbury, drama and fiction.
Hear more drama and fiction, old and new, on arburyproductions.co.uk.